Welcome to the Graveyard Girls podcast with Amelia and Natasha.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to a brand new episode. And I am continuing with my police through the...
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Throughout the decades. I'm sort of going from like the 60s up to the 80s. Okay. I nearly did do like all of the last four decades, but it gets really confusing because in this next 20 years, forensics-wise...
Mm.
Not much is really going on. However, actual policing in terms of how we police the UK, that changes quite drastically.
Okay.
So this one's going to be more of a what happened with the police in the UK for this one. And then, yeah, the forensic stuff all kind of happens in the 80s for us.
Yes.
Okay. So since the 60s, the police's official height...
Height
was reduced to 5'8", which is 173 centimetres for men,
mm-hmm.
and 5'4", which is 163 centimetres for women, though many had retained the original, which was the standard 5'10", which is 178 centimetres. It isn't a thing today, but before...
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Also...
Back then it was... Yeah, go on, you go.
Back then, people weren't as tall.
They weren't. But also, it would seem as one, it was already, it's a man's job.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
felt like you needed to be a certain height to be able to apprehend someone.
Okay.
Obviously, now we don't get rid of it. One, because we also recognise the fact that lots of other ethnicities are already a lot shorter.
Yeah.
So they would never meet the height requirement, which means it's technically discrimination. But that wasn't a thing back in the 60s.
No.
You look at the police on the whole, they didn't employ black officers. It wasn't a thing. They were only just allowing women in. So I think the whole 5'10", they thought that was reasonable. It kind of started in the late 1800s,
yeah.
and they just kind of didn't change it. And then we'd, obviously, the back end of the Second World War, they were like, well, actually, these shorter people can actually do the job.
We actually need some manpower.
Yeah. So
whether you are a man or not,
yeah.
we need
And not
some
many
people.
Women meet 5'10". So.
No. I think I'm almost there. So even I could.
Yeah, I think I'm only like 5'6" or something. I'm not very tall.
I'm like 5'8", maybe 5'10". Don't know.
Yeah, you are taller than me. But yeah, I don't know by how much. So yeah. yeah, basically the height requirement, that's changing now. So at 5'4", we could both now serve in the police if we wanted to.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Seems a bit too much.
Okay. It's one of the very few jobs we could have done at the time, though. Other than that, I'll be a secretary and I don't really want to do that either. So maybe I'd rather just chase people around the streets. Between 1960 and 1964, the Royal Commission into the Police commissioned its results, mm-hmm. and that resulted in the Police Act of 1964. Now, I will go into detail in this in a minute, but I'm just doing the brief timeline first. Okay, so then in 1966, Mohammed Yusuf Dar is the first non-white male police officer, and he works in Coventry.
1966?
Yes.
Yeah, so and in Coventry, you would assume London.
Yeah, I thought that as well. So yeah, very sort of, not ahead of its time,
No.
But it's very behind. But it's not where I would have expected first non-white serving police officer to be. So
I'd assume London, because most...
But were they almost morbid discriminatory there? I don't know. I think they were, because that's where, when people travel from other countries, that's where they typically went.
Yeah.
And I felt like they used them as the scapegoats for all the crime. They just accused everyone that wasn't British.
Yeah, exactly.
Or non-white. Basically, yeah, that was the thing. So then to follow that, okay, I apologise in advance because I might pronounce this name wrong. In 1968, Cicelyn Faye Allen was the first female non-white police officer joining the Metropolitan Police. So she did join London's police. So that's just 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So setting a bit of a benchmark. By 1970, the Metropolitan Police Helicopter Unit were formed and based in Elstree in Hertfordshire.
I don't know if that's...
I felt like that seems really early. We've just made a massive jump. Like, we're only just using motorbikes in the last one, and then now we're just like, let's get a helicopter.
So we have a helicopter. Well, of course we have helicopters, but that's strange.
Yeah. I feel like they only just had one.
Yeah. Well, they only have, like, one now.
Yeah. So, and most of them now, it's charity-based, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Charities are not actually, So, yeah, bit of a strange one. I don't know why it threw me out. It's like, it seemed really... like, it shouldn't be. It's the 70s, but... Also, I don't know, it just seems really advanced for everything else.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because it's like before it, so we just felt things are weird. I don't know. I think we forget the concept. Like, we've already got aeroplanes and everything, so by this point, I think we're just forgetting.
But, like, use of a helicopter just for crime.
I feel like it wouldn't have been, like, petty crimes. It would have had to be a really serious crime for it to borrowing a helicopter. Or, like, they've got to go to a really remote area that they can't get to on ground.
Yeah. It's just weird.
Maybe they've just seen a spike in really weird crimes and they've decided they needed a helicopter. Or some rich man's donated one.
No, someone was like, I really want a helicopter, kind of justify this.
Yeah.
And be like, yes, we need it for crime.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we say that, but when they first introduced the cars, they only had two and they didn't roll them out in the other rest of the police services for like another 15 years, so.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought the helicopter was going to be the same thing. Maybe so they were thinking thing. Like that was going to be the next mode of transport. Maybe they thought like the helicopter was going to be the new car.
Maybe. So next up is jetpack, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
In 1974, the local government act of 1972 means that police forces in England and Wales were merged and are now reduced down to 43 larger forces.
Okay.
So, because I didn't think, it doesn't sound that many, but then they just cover large areas, basically.
Which might hinder.
It both hinders, but also helps. Depends how you want to look at it. I'll go into
more communication between forces. Yeah. Yes, probably. Okay.
And like they have focusing on certain things. They're better at sort of learning what communities are like in the area. Because obviously for us now, we have like the north-south divide.
Mm.
Before then, by individual, there wasn't much communication between everyone. By now, grouping those into bigger ones, they can get a better idea of the demographic. And let's be honest, now that people can travel further, a lot of criminals are going outside of their town to commit the crime and come back. So in that sense, by merging a whole borough together, you can create... It's not like you're going to get to the end of the street going, oh, well, this is not my jurisdiction anymore, so I'll just stop here.
Yep, and turn right. Yeah, okay.
So, I don't know, it has its pros and cons.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
Then, also in 1974, the Police National Computer is launched. So that's when they start, obviously, you know, like all your fingerprints and things like that.
Mm.
So it's not like your modern day computers, like how we think about it, it's their equivalent. I mean, we did have computers, the early prototypes were out by then, weren't they?
Yes.
But it was like one place, there would be a place where there was these big computers. But
big computer that is the size of a house.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's because like when people think of all the data stored now, it's still like some big warehouse thing where it's like just loads of like flashy light things. It's not a computer like a laptop. It's not that sort of computer.
No.
But when you read it first, you think, oh, one computer doing all that work. Just one person like frantically typing. What's this? Oh, yeah. Also in 1974, the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad. Why can I not speak?
Crime Squad.
The West Midlands Serious Crime Squad is established, though they are later disbanded after they are caught up in a scandal, which I will kind of... is going to go into my next episode because they're disbanded in the 80s.
Mm.
So, in 1975, Scotland's Local Government Act of 1973 sees its 17 forces now merged into 8 larger forces. So, okay. Scotland kind of do everything a bit behind us. I think they're just like that in general. They like to almost rebel a little bit. They want to be independent. So.
They do want to be independent, and they're not behind us anymore. They're, I think, ahead of us now.
Yeah, but in terms of all the policings, like, they've done it so many years after England and Wales have done it. They're like fighting it, like, no, we're not doing it.
And then they're like, go on.
Yeah, actually, it would be easier. We'll see if you fail first.
Exactly. That's how you do it.
Okay. Then in 1977, the Metropolitan Police's flying squad corruption is uncovered in Operation Countryman, and I will go into more detail on that one in this episode. Okay, so basically the big part of the 60s into the 70s is the Police Act of 1964.
Okay.
And this is basically an act that goes into Parliament. And it updates the legislation within police forces. So it's brought about the amalgamation, which is like merging, basically, of the existing forces, and gave the Home Secretary new powers to supervise local constabularies.
Okay.
As part of this, there was also something called the Royal Commission. Now, this actually started a few years before in 1960. So in 1960, the Royal Commission is appointed under Henry Willink, and this came into action after two policing scandals had come to light. Now, this Royal Commission had sort of exposed a lot of corruption that was going on, because a lot of time then, like, police, everything was all very in back pocket, and the government were also doing things sort of a bit in back, well, they're still doing that now, but there was very in back pocket, and I think there was a lot of wrongful convictions is probably the best way to sort of put it together. But also, either bits of evidence were conveniently going missing, so things were never brought to trial, which I think that was the major problem. But also, people were buying things within the unit to get better in their job.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. So there's a lot of corruption. So some people were getting put into positions of like chief constable when in reality they weren't capable of the job because they knew someone, they passed a bit of cash backhand and got the job they wanted, basically.
Yeah, that's not.
And then, yeah, the way you scratch it. My back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah.
And then probably that maybe local government person was maybe doing something they shouldn't have been doing. But because they gave the other one the job as chief constable, he's now not going to uncover their crimes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which, like, morally, like, you go into the police force and then you kind of commit crime.
But I think there's a lot of that in politics altogether.
Yeah, there is, of course.
There's not quite that. It's like, I remember one of my cousins, she really wanted to go into law, and then she like studied it all at like A-levels and stuff, and then she went to uni and she realised she was never going to be able to make the change. Because like, we sit here and go, we'd be better in Parliament, because like, we know all the changes. But the reality is, you'd get there. You as a lone person can't do it. You've got to get someone else to help you. Mm-hmm. And in reality, you're probably going to have to do something illegal to be able to get where you want to get, so you can try and make the changes you want to make. So somewhere along the line, you're going to have to do something that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Is the reality of it, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Unless you completely got rid of everyone all in one swoop and got loads of new people in.
Which is kind of, yes, but she wants to do it for good, whereas these people are doing it for personal gain.
Yeah, but I do wonder if a number of them wouldn't have done that when they first started. They've just then got into the job and realised, yeah, most of these people are corrupt. Because you look at, like, the early 1900s, a lot of these policemen are just like, it's a well-paid job, so
yeah, of course, and then they're not going to look at their own, are they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, and they tried to weed them out, and they did kind of throughout the wars, and when they bring women in, they've got to bring in new laws, and they are slowly weeding people out. Yes. But there's still a lot of things.
There's always, we're human, there's always going to be at least one or two people
that spoil it for everyone else. But yeah, so it was also, there was a lot of, it was basically corruption between councillors, chief constables and the watch committee. And they are basically like committees that oversee policing. So they were just hiding things about cases.
Yeah.
So the commission published a report on the 31st of May, 1962. And in this, they recommended that there be an urgent review on the number of police and the areas in which they covered. Some other recommendations included things like the following. So no single national force was to be formed, but that local governments should exercise more powers over local forces. So basically, I think this was to stop there being a major corruption thing. Because you sort of look at it, you could then, how would you do the governing bodies? If you've just got one police force for the whole of the UK, if there's corrupt people in like one end, they're going to corrupt the whole thing. Whereas if by you having different forces, you can have one force investigate the another force, but still carry on with their work.
Yeah.
Which I think is, to be honest, I agree with this. It's a much better way of doing it.
Yeah.
Retention of small forces, so this was forces between 200 to 350 officers, were justifiable only by special circumstances, such as the distribution of population and the area's geography. So if you have a really remote area, there's certain parts in the UK where you just don't need that number of officers, because either part of it's rural, like you can't physically, there's no one inhabiting that area. But also you still would merge boroughs together, but for your actual per mile, you would only have so many officers, if that makes sense. There's just some areas you just don't require it. It's not like densely populated like centre of London.
No, just some random police officer in the woods.
I bet there was some somewhere.
It's like, I'm a park ranger, not a police officer.
Yeah. The optimum size for a force was more than 500 officers within the population of at least 250,000. So 500 for every 250,000 residents.
Okay.
Okay. At the time of the report, there was 158 police forces in Great Britain. 97 of those had less than 350 officers in them. So there's lots of little independent police, which is okay in terms of people if you wanted to go and report a crime, because there's lots of police officers about. But actually, these all weren't communicating with each other, and it just wasn't as efficient as it could be. So obviously, this took quite a bit of time to go through Parliament and then for the whole thing to be sort of worked out of like who's going to merge with who. But it finally resulted in the Police Act of 1964. The Act itself received its royal approval on the 10th of June in 1964. It meant that England and Wales would now have police areas, and this would mean that some areas would be combined. So rather than just a city police, you'd have like a city and a borough or borough count, like county boroughs.
Yeah.
So like for us, we obviously have Leicester City and then we have Leicester County and things like that. The Home Secretary also had the power to force compulsory amalgamations of forces. So he could say, actually, we've looked at your numbers for this year. There's not enough of you. We're going to merge you with this other one.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Because I think at this point, like, the actual individual police stations, whoever is at the top of them, he had quite a lot of power in, like, in terms of budget and what money was spent prior to this. Whereas now they're looking, actually, let's join it up with the local authorities. Yeah. And it's hit and miss. Some of it you think, yeah, that's better because you've got more people looking into what the police are doing. It's not just that station by itself. So in that sense, if something goes wrong, it's more likely to be picked up. However, you've then also got that thing of you've got people that don't understand how the police work being involved in how the money's... Like, you know now, like, the budget's sent out by local authorities. Those local authorities aren't just looking at the police, they're looking at other things. And someone might come, oh, well, I want money for this. Okay, it's fine, we'll just cut the police budget. When in reality, they probably, because they don't understand how it works, they don't realise. They look at maybe a piece of paper and think, oh, we can afford to cut it.
Yes.
But we can't. So it's... I think
they afforded a helicopter, so...
Yes, well, yeah. But that's it. Some areas then would have benefited from this, and others it wouldn't have worked quite so well, I don't think.
Well, yeah, it's like looking at going on what in America at the minute. All the money goes to the police, whereas the teachers are asking for all the money, where they're getting all brand new cars and stuff, and the teachers are like, we need supplies for the
kids. Can we have some pencils and pens, please?
Yeah.
Okay. New police authorities were established, and they were known as watch committees. Police committees or combined police authorities. Sorry. So it depends on the area. There's so many words. All in one. Yeah. Basically, it was basically all the same thing, but you're either a watch committee, a police committee, or a complice... combined!
You're a complice...
I am combining the police. A combined police authority. So basically, they all do the same thing, but they've given them a different name depending on what area you're in, just to make it complicated.
It's like if you call a cob or a...
A bap a bap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like baps.
Call them baps. It just makes me think of something else.
I know, baps.
Okay. Police authorities were to be made up of 2/3 elected members and 1/3 magistrates, which is good because obviously each area would elect so many people, but I still think down the line there was a bit of corruption going on there. But then obviously 1/3 magistrates, there were people obviously working in Parliament. So I don't know. I think it rounds it out a bit more, doesn't it? You've got people from different backgrounds. Chief constables were given the power to appoint direct and control special constables.
Mm-hmm.
The chief constable was now also required to make an annual report to the police authority, because up until this point, they didn't really have this whole yearly report of what's gone on in the police station, how many arrests have you made, and things like that. And again, this is hit and miss. One, it's really good to get an idea of crime rates and what's going on, but also I feel like maybe this is where some wrongful convictions happened, because they wanted to hit a quota of how many people they can arrest for a certain crime.
And there's probably just a random person who's like adamant that this person committed the crime. So they're going to be like, it was them.
I think then it became a competition of who's got the best report.
Yeah.
So depending on how you want to look at it, I don't know. There's pros and cons for both, isn't there?
Mm.
Any police authority could request the report... could request a report on policing in their police area. So they could do a random one now. They could just say, okay, they could maybe have a tip off or a complaint about someone, and they go, right, we want a police report for this area, please.
Okay.
Which I think is good because it doesn't give them time to
That's how it hide should it. Be. I think if you give someone time, they're going to either cover it up or do how it should be done correctly. Yeah. So you can't see that they're doing it wrong.
That's it.
Light work.
Police authorities were given the power to choose chief constables, deputies and assistant chief constables from a Home Office shortlist. So I think, as we already know down the line, there were still a few corrupt ones within there, and they were picked or given money to make the shortlist. But on a whole, you couldn't just appoint your best mate as a chief constable anymore. So that kind of helps.
Makes sense.
They could also sort of force a chief constable to retire, but they did need the Home Secretary's approval first. So, you know, if they caught one doing wrong, they could go, right, you need to resign. And that was it. But they still had to send the report to the Home Secretary first.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So it's like they can put it forward and they can make it happen quickly, but they do need that Home Secretary to tick the final box.
Okay.
The Home Secretary could order a complaint against a police force to be investigated by officers from another force. So this is the whole thing helping out with not having a one national police service. After this act had been brought into the area, there was now only 49 large forces, which is a massive difference from the 158. down to 49. You're like a third, basically.
Yeah.
Forces in England and Wales, and some covered more than two counties. By 1974, there was just 43 forces. So they keep bringing them down, bringing them down. Which I think it does kind of work in a way in terms of communication. It forces them. And I also think it weirdly makes it easier to sort out the paperwork because... Yeah, it really makes it easier to sort out the paperwork because it's all under one county. Like, you merge all those bits together. Because I should imagine, like, imagine if we had different... At one point, we would have had, like, a police here where you are and another one where I am, but they wouldn't have communicated. Whereas now, we could still have that, but they all have to report back to Leicester County Police. Well, are we County Police or are we Leicestershire and Rutland? And then there's obviously the City Police. That's what we've got, I think.
Yeah. I know there's one near Foss Park.
Yeah, that's the only one, but that's not the whole of police for Leicester. If that makes sense. There's Leicester City Police, and I want to say the other one is Leicestershire and Rutland. So basically that covers any of the towns.
Yeah. Which is massive.
Yeah. And obviously Rutland as well. But a lot of things, like, you know, when you go to hospital, it's like Leicestershire and Rutland.
Yeah.
So anywhere that's not Leicester City, basically.
I don't know. There used to be a police officer who lived on this street, and I know he moved around to somewhere else. So we could just knock on his door and be like,
okay,
what is
I'm it? Sure, I'm sure we've got like a Leicestershire and Rutland, and then it will be the City Police. Yeah. That seems
sounds right.
Yeah, like I'm just thinking, like, you know, when you're doing things like your council tax and stuff, like, because even though I'm literally like a mile from the city, we're classed as county. Okay. I think that's how it works.
Yes.
I should maybe shut up on this topic because I don't really know. But I feel like that sounds right.
Someone will be like, hey, no, you are wrong. We are this.
I'm sure someone will correct me. We're
someone
like wrong.
Somehow Nottingham. And you're like,
yeah, I get a lot of things we can refer you to Nottingham. I was like, they're like, it's your neighbouring. I was like, well, it's really not that neighbour-y from me. Because I'm like, we're South Leicester, really.
Yeah.
Well, I am. I don't know what your class is. Are you class as North? Or East?
West.
Oh, fuck.
You're on the wrong side of... West. We're West.
Yeah, well, I'm South Leicester. Okay, I'm going to show up. We need to edit this bit out of the episode because I've waffled.
And people might know where we live.
Yeah. Okay, so West Midlands Serious Crime Squad, which was formed in 74 but disbanded in 89 due to its abuse of power.
Oh no.
Obviously, as I've previously mentioned, I'm actually going to cover that in the next episode. However, I do in this episode want to discuss the corruption at the Metropolitan Police's Flying Squad.
Okay. Flying? With the helicopter?
No, it's the one that's in, well, obviously it's in London, but they do like robbery. It's like Fast Response, Flying Squad.
Oh, okay. You mentioned a helicopter.
It's been around since the early 1900s.
Okay.
Is
it just called flying because they get there fast?
Yeah. Okay. Fast Response, basically. It's a team dedicated to that specific crime.
Yeah.
So it's one of the first ones where they kind of make a department specifically for this thing. So basically, rather than you just ringing up, like, they'd refer it straight to the Flying Squad, so they deal with that incident on its own, whereas other things, they like, it's a generalised thing.
Flying. Not.
Maybe they do fling an officer over the hedge or something.
You're like, oh, hello.
Like, rapid response. Because I think that's what they have now. They have the Flying Squad, and then they have, like, some areas call it rapid response, but it's basically the same thing. Okay.
Well, they've got a helicopter now. They shouldn't call it flying.
Okay.
I imagine them coming in SWAT style.
Okay. Maybe
is that what we do? I don't know.
I'm going to it.
Okay.
Sort of get into it. Okay. They are a branch of the Serious and Organised Crime Command in London's Metropolitan Police area. So
I want to do the Special Victims Unit. Dun dun.
That's, again, it's like another version of the Flying Squad, except it's specific in that area.
Okay.
Okay. So you're kind of...
I just wanted to do the theme.
Yeah, but you've got to have something else for the Flying Squad. You've got to have like a whoosh.
Yeah. Probably break windows as they come flying through that. You're like, okay, can you we're not paying for rest. That.
Was there a robbery here? No, it's just you that's come through the window.
No, that was next door.
Yeah, okay. It's been around, I knew it'd been around since the early 1900s. This is how long ago I wrote this episode that I can't even remember what I wrote. It has been around since 1919. However, it becomes notable for all the wrong reasons from 1978 to 1981.
Because it's them busting through your windows.
Just before then, its name had sort of changed, not officially, but into people that sort of knew the area. It had changed to the Central Robbery Squad. Why can't I pronounce P today?
Squad.
What's wrong with me? They were also often referred to as the Heavy Mob or the Sweeney, which...
Okay, so they're a bit loose and heavy with their hands.
Yeah.
Okay.
They also dealt with a lot of, you know, the whole Ronnie and Reggie Cray thing.
Yeah.
Bit in the back pocket.
Yep.
So this is sort of why they end up becoming known for all the wrong reasons, because mm-hmm. they're linked with lots of mobs and gangs, but also people call them the Sweeney because Flying Squad is sort of similar to Sweeney Todd, if yeah. you say it quick. So it kind of got the nickname.
Oh, so it's a bit like Cockney rhyme and slang.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was during this time that the squad was seen to have close ties with the criminal fraternities. A number of scandals had happened which involved bribery and corruption, and which the Commander Detective Chief Superintendent Kenneth Jury, fucking hell, that was a mouthful.
And he's on the jury as well.
Yeah. Was convicted of 5 counts of corruption and was imprisoned for 8 years. 12 other officers were convicted and many more were forced to resign, but their names weren't revealed.
How, like, cocky do you have to be that, like, you're in this squad that's known for being in with the criminals that you're supposed to be...
Basically, you know how when we looked in the early 1900s yeah. where some of the men that went into the reserve police were actually murderers, and that's kind of how they got away with it?
Yeah.
This is the equivalent.
Yeah, but like, how can you get away with it if you're known to be that? Everyone just turns a blind eye.
Because a lot of these, they would have gone in, they would have been genuine police officers, and they've been bought by criminals, and they've realised these criminals will be offering them triple what their police wage is. So they've taken it. But then once they're in it, they're stuck.
Well, no, that's fine, but like, people... know about it,
but that's the thing,
and like, then no one does anything about
it. The ones that would have known about it were the ones that were in it. The ones on the outside wouldn't have known it, or they would have had a whiff, but because that person's so much higher up than them, they could never do anything.
So everything gets shut down before it even has a chance to
and it's like, you'd either then, because in theory, let's be honest, if you were just a little police lady, like I don't know, not even a special constable, let's say you were patrolling the street, if you found out that your chief constable was taking bribes from a mob, who are you going to go to? Because he's at the top. And even if you didn't realise he was and you thought it was the person below, you go to the person one down for him, they're involved in it. They either go to the gang. Yeah, that's it. They either go to the gang or you're going to lose your job. They'll find a way that you did something wrong that they're going to get rid of you. So, I think that's why now we have the whole, oh my God, what's the TV programme where they investigate the corrupt police officers? Is it on duty? Might be.
The one on BBC.
Yeah. I've watched so many programmes. That's basically why we have them now. We do genuinely have one of those.
Which is smart.
Yeah, I think we need it. It's because of all this shit that happens in the 70s and 80s, basically. I mean, it was happening before, but not on this scale.
Where there's humans, there will always be.
Yes. So these scandals led to the investigation by Dorset Constabulary, who then set up the investigation known as Operation Countrymen. And the Flying Squad is basically still going today. It didn't get completely shut down. They just basically got rid of all the baddies, as you want to put it.
That we know of.
Turf them out and got new officers in.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean there's no more corruption. They're I'm just saying. Smarter. I'm not accusing anyone. No. There's also just, you know.
But I'm saying humans are going to human. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So in terms of forensic offences, as I've already said, there really wasn't that many. So, in the mid-60s, developments led to the identification of firearms residue that could now be left, like, they could pick up on skin and clothing. Because before the
powder.
But it's got a bit more detail than it was before. They've discovered it before, but they didn't really know how to analyse it and what to do with it. So, they've made advances in that. Breathalysers are also being developed. So, you know, if you're about to be a drink driver, you're about to get in the shit.
Yeah.
In 1977, the FBI began the use of computerized scans for fingerprint cards from the thousands of people and added them to the automated fingerprint identification system, which is now known as AFIS. So they've obviously already had the paper ones like us, but they're now starting to put it into computers. And I think they're a little bit ahead with us in terms of computer systems.
Yes, you always have to do it when you go to America. So you have to put your fingers on the thing. Sorry, it's such a faff. Just let me in. I've not committed any crimes.
But then it's hard, isn't it? Because you're already in the system. So you're like, it's going to be technically easy for them to catch criminals because everyone's in the system.
Yeah.
However, it also opens up to the fact you could be wrongly convicted of a crime, which is why I kind of feel like we haven't done it here. We still only take your prints if you go to the police station.
Which is probably the correct way to do it
But then there is sometimes, you know, when like there's no match to the fingerprint and you think if we had every... There's pros and cons for both, isn't there?
Yeah.
Because if they had everyone in it, that would solve a lot of cases because there would always be a match. Or you'd know then it's someone that's not a UK resident.
Mm.
Whereas now it could still be a UK resident and you're only going to find out by chance.
Yeah.
So there's pros and cons of both, isn't there?
It depends on what type of work they do. Sometimes they might have to have their fingerprints on record for their type of work. Oh, yeah, some do.
And then, like, automatically, obviously, anyone that works in the police, they have to put it in. Just because, obviously, they can be ruled out then in case they've accidentally touched some evidence or something.
Is it, or is it so they can get away with the crime because touched something?
Yeah, but again, it depends how you want to look at it. There's always going to be... Yep. There's never going to be a foolproof version, is there, basically, is the answer to that. From the 1960s, voice recordings were now used as evidence. Obviously, we had voice recordings, and we already had telephones and tape recorders and things, but it was now being used as admissible evidence in trials. So, I hadn't really considered it.
Aren't you supposed to let someone know you're recording them? Otherwise, it's against the law. No, in terms of,
like,
telephones,
so you know, like, when you rang to, like, rang 999?
Yeah.
You know, like, you have the call operator. You know,
so they let you know that you're being recorded, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that would now be brought into court. Yes. So you could say, John's bludgeoning me before. They weren't bringing that into court. Now the dying person has literally been recorded going, my husband John is bludgeoning me over the head before.
Yeah, it's just...
The operator would come in and say, she said her husband, but it's like hearsay. Whereas now they're using the actual evidence. Voice recordings. Yeah, or say, like, you taped me murdering someone. You can now take that tape in and use it as evidence.
Okay. I think there's, like, a weird clause. You have to let someone know you're recording them.
Oh, yeah, it has to be disclosed to the defence
before
you go in. But, yeah, basically, this is the first time they're actually using that type as, like, admissible evidence.
Ah, okay.
Okay. In 1974, there were further advances in gun residue detection, meaning that a suspect can now be linked to a scene and even could show even how close the suspect was to the gun at the time it had been fired. Because at that point, they could... maybe have a bit of residue, go, yeah, he was there, but he could go, I fired that gun at another time and it was the same stuff. But now they could say how close they were to the actual gun when it went off. So
I pulled the trigger because that's how close it was, or I was stood next to someone who pulled the trigger.
Yeah. The technology was actually developed at the Aerospace Corporation in the US. So I thought that was a bit interesting. We now, by the 60s, had 9 separate specialist forensic labs in England and Wales by this point.
Okay, not too many, but you say I think that,
but then I remember we had this conversation when we did the last episode, and then when I got home and thought about it, we don't like have a forensic lab everywhere you go. There's main ones up and down the UK. They're just massive, like, warehouse style ones where everything gets sent, so like they'll be wherever the Leicester ones get, probably also like Warwickshire and all that, they probably also get sent there as well.
So it's about the appropriate amount.
So I feel like they've just dotted them around the UK to sort of be able to... So, like, now even those little rural ones, they can send off all their stuff as well. So, basically, these decades, in terms of actual forensics, not much happens. And it's not a case of nothing's going on. But when I was looking into it, and this is where it's really complicated, because I ummed and ahed as to whether or not to include it in the episode. But there is lots of testing going on, but it's all around blood group and then blood cell types, like red blood cells, white blood cells, and different types of enzymes, which would be... found in things, and some enzymes are only found in humans, so it helps prove like this blood was human blood. So, and they're working a lot with trying to extract stuff from dried blood, whereas before you needed not only wet blood but a large amount of wet blood to be able to taste it. Now they're trying to find ways of extracting it from smaller things, so they're looking at things like enzymes. So there's no particular breakthroughs, they're just doing lots of testing in these 2 decades. But then that's when it goes to help us in ready for our next episode when we go into the 80s, because we do sort of get some forensic breakthroughs, because all this testing that's happened in this 20 years is sort of, it's building up to that. So the only other thing I did look at was, like, what was the crime rate like in the UK? So we did see a large rise in crime. It continued to rise after the war, with an average of over 1 million crimes recorded each year in the 60s. So that's like 10 million by the end of the decade. And they're just reported ones.
Yeah.
2 million each year in the 70s.
Oh, it's going up. Okay.
Yep. And by the 80s, in each year, it was an average of 3.5 million reported crimes. Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, in particular, we saw an increase in bank robberies. and high-end like jewelry stores. That was the main thing that increased. Obviously, other things kind of went up and down.
Mm.
And there were some things, it was a case of like, now people speculate, like, has there actually been a rise, or is it a case of more people feel comfortable reporting things? Like, now there's a whole thing of, oh, there's more rapes going on. And there could be that there is more rapes happening, but it also could be that more people feel comfortable reporting a rape now than they would have 20 years ago. Yeah. So is it increasing, or are we just getting better at reporting it and
that's the argument, solving isn't it? It's probably... it? Mixture. Both.
Yeah. So yeah, I think maybe they're getting more violent with the crimes and changing how they're doing it. They're finding new ways to get a victim that they wouldn't have maybe had access to all those years ago. I feel like 100 years ago is a crime of opportunity.
Yes.
Whereas now it's so much easier to assault someone because it's easier to meet up with people, if that makes sense. Like, you can meet someone on the internet and there's all different types of sex crimes now. Whereas what we would consider a sexual assault now wouldn't have been.
Yes.
Because was it a case that I covered in the 30s or 40s? It was the one where they didn't class it as a rape because she said, but also it was about her breasts being touched and they were like, that's not a sexual assault.
Yeah.
It's like, he's got to penetrate you for it to be a sexual assault. So.
Yes. And in the news recently, there was that, I think she's 16, she was sexually assaulted in the metaverse or gang raped. Right, okay. So you don't even have to meet up in person now.
Oh, okay. How does that work? I haven't seen this case.
I don't know.
And they're just sharing sexual things of you, in which case it is still a violation because they're sharing things.
It's, you know, with the avatars, you can all meet up in this place online. They
gang raping her character?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
And obviously she reported that, so now they're looking at how they can police that type of,
I suppose, things, because it could escalate, because you could argue if they think that's acceptable behavior on a computer, would they do it in real life? Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. Maybe we'll have to do that as a joint case. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah
I don't, how would you police that?
I don't know.
Okay, we might have to investigate this. Maybe we'll do it as a joint
obviously
case.
She's brave enough to say like this happened, and then police are taking it seriously. But I don't know how they're going
to
do it.
I think you've got to, because we're moving towards technology. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Because it is a threat, really, isn't it?
And I think all these men are strangers. So even if they're willing to do that to a stranger, even if people that they're willing to do it with are strangers.
What would they do with people that they know? Yeah. I suppose it's whether you would class it as a sexual assault or a threatening, aggressive behaviour. I suppose it depends what you're going to charge it as.
I think they're seeing it as a physical, but life's changing.
Yeah.
If we're more online.
That's quite interesting, actually. I hadn't thought about this.
It's like sexting. It's not really seen. It's not.
Yeah.
Physical, but it's...
Yeah, it's implied intent as well, hasn't it? Yeah. It can, if you then, this sounds a bit harsh, but if they do end up eventually going on to rape the person, it can be like help used to say like they had showed intent, doesn't it? That's why they use the messages now.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not a violation until they physically do something to you. Because obviously it is. If you feel violated, it's very different. But I think a lot of the time they use these messages to show they had the intent beforehand, and how if you don't deal with it at the early stage, it escalates.
Yep.
Mm. Which is, that's a really interesting thing, actually, that metaverse thing. I hadn't thought about that.
No. This is you can see why things are being created, but then you're always going to have people who are going to bend it to an evil, dark thing. So the internet.
How much of it was, not saying it's the sort of thing you could joke about, because it's not something you should joke about, but were they genuinely just, I don't want to say, because it's not the sort of thing you should mess around with, but
when men joke, it's, they joke about
would
dark
those men
things.
Otherwise, would they have actually ever done it?
Don't know.
Hmm.
But they shouldn't be in a situation where they're talking to an underage girl.
Well, yeah, there's also that. But then also, how do they manage whether she's underage or not?
I don't know.
Physically talking to her. Yeah. She can be anyone on the internet.
Mm. Which has always been the thing growing up.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah, I don't know. Very interesting. Like I said, maybe I'll have to...
So, yes, policing is going to get a hell of a lot harder in the future.
Yeah, I've looked into my bits for my next few decades, and there's a lot going on, and I really don't know how I'm going to write the episode, I'll be honest with you, because it's quite complex.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make it too sciencey, because I feel like it might blow people's minds. But I also don't want to brush over it, because it's like,
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I've got to get a bit clever with that, I think, for the next episode. I find it really hard. I'm hoping I'm not boring people because I'm going through the decades. Interesting. Yeah. I think there's some things that are surprised us that I didn't realise was a thing. Yeah. When I saw it, I was like, what?
So you have the budget for that? Okay. Ill-gotten gains, probably.
Yeah. But then, like I said, you looked at the early police cars and they just had two police cars for about 5 years and that was it.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
It's just strange how, obviously, time goes on, things change.
Yeah.
And we're in, like, a comfortable position where we have basically everything that we think we need to solve crime. Obviously, it's changing because of, obviously, that crime. Yeah. But it's just strange.
Hmm. I do find it interesting, though. I'm hoping now, like, now it's opened our minds up as well. Like, you know, when we go back and look at these other cases and we go, well, what were they doing at this point? I feel like now, hopefully, it opens our minds up a bit to thinking, well, actually, they didn't have this at this point, or they did have this, so they could have sorted this out.
It's like, I think, is it the burning of the Alexandria? I think a lot of information was lost then that we should really, in theory, be further ahead technology-wise and life-wise. But we're not because of lots of information.
I was just remembering things.
Yeah.
We can't remember all that information that we put in there.
There's a lot of information. I'm sure it's burning of the Alexandria. I could be wrong. Something happened that lost a lot of information.
So you were one of them people that were supposed to remember all the information and you didn't.
I have a faulty brain. It's not my fault.
Yeah. They employed the wrong person. You didn't have the credentials.
I'm good at remembering things like from a few years ago, but if you want me to remember.
Yeah. Or I can remember like really pointless crap that I don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never anything important.
No.
Like, I can tell you weird animal facts, but anything actually useful or relevant.
Which is kind of a good thing if I want to watch a film again for, like, I've not seen for a good few years, because then I'm like, oh, it's new.
Yeah, see, I did this thing the other day on Netflix. I was watching a few documentaries and I was like, oh, this is, like, you know, when it pops up in the top 10, I'd actually seen it when it came out. Like, some of them were like 2018, like, they've just like either re-added them on Netflix or regurgitated it. And because I watched it when it first came out, it doesn't recognise that you've already watched the thing.
Okay.
And at first I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And I start watching it and I'll be like halfway through the first episode and you're thinking, I swear I've seen this before. And then you'll get to a point and I think, yes, I have already watched this.
It's like Lord of the Rings. I loved it, but I can't remember any of it.
Yeah, see, I watch that quite frequently. And even sometimes there's a scene that like surprises me and I'm like, why am I surprised by it? Like, I've seen this so many times.
Yeah. I've even got started reading the book and I'm like, yeah, I can't remember.
I must admit, that's one thing I'm really bad with. I've not read all the books.
Like, I'm
bad
reading
for doing that, to be fair.
I'm reading Game of Thrones at the minute, and it's taken like 30 hours, and I'm not finished it yet.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And also, because like I don't really watch the whole Game of Thrones thing, is the Game of Thrones book, like, there's loads of books, isn't there?
Yes.
Is that like each series, like other things, like Harry Potter, like each book is a film? Or is the whole of the Game of Thrones that you've listened to so far, is that just the first book?
I think it's just the first book.
Okay.
I've not finished the first book yet.
Okay.
But to me, that's the first series. But I think he was still writing the final book as they were still writing the series.
Okay.
But he's not finished the book yet.
Oh, okay.
Reminds me of some. Yeah.
Okay, so they just like had to make up an ending.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think there was a clause that if they could figure out who John's parents were, they could finish the story. And they did. But then they shitted the bed, so.
Okay.
They shat the bed.
Okay, on that note.
Yeah.
I think that's us done for this episode.
That ended,
weirdly.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the meantime.
Keep creeping.
And we'll keep digging.
I forgot how we ended.